Hello, everyone. Welcome in to the final debate night of 2021. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Brody, Silas behind the mixing board back there. Yo. We got quite the show tonight. Not a ton of topics. Probably going to keep it a little bit shorter, but you know, wrapping out the year.
Strong. You know what I just thought about?
What?
Do you go in and edit out the intro audio, or do they have to listen? Oh, okay.
Oh, wait, like the post
people podcast
on video?
No, like if I go
audio.
Yeah,
I edit that out.
Okay. So yeah. I was like, are we just having people groove out for 5 minutes?
I take care of that.
Because we like to do, like for the live stream, we like to have, you know, 5 minute time for people to kind of come in here.
Yeah,
and chill,
no. The audio people don't have to worry about any of that.
Silas, you have an announcement?
He's engaged.
Yeah.
Oh.
No. The winner of the blank Rocket Roach signed by all three of us.
Heck yeah.
Is going to the Zach Snyder.
Snyder. So, Zach, we're going to respond to your comment that won and give you the instructions on how to claim your disc. Really appreciate all the entries and appreciate each and every one of you for listening.
We crossed the 14K barrier
on subscribers.
Shout out. Let's go. 15K next, 20K, 100K, 1 million. Could you imagine if a million people were subscribed to a disc golf podcast?
A million people aren't subscribed to any disc golf channel. At all.
What's the biggest channel?
Jomez, 300 some thousand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
I feel like the Pro Tour will probably hit 500,000 first.
No.
You don't think so?
Not
if they have it, if they have it set up to where like that's the ability of watching it for free. Like if they make it to where you can watch.
Yeah, Jomez will hit that well before that happens.
You think so?
Jomez is only 150,000 subscribers away, and the Pro Tour. Whoa, I hear myself echoing.
But the Pro Tour. But the Pro Tour could take off if they wanted to.
You know, maybe other people do this. I do this all the time. Whenever I'm searching for something on YouTube, Google, anything, I just assume it knows I'm searching for within disc golf. So I'll type in Pro Tour. And hit search.
Oh, yeah.
And shocker, Disc Golf Pro Tour doesn't come up.
Not going to come up.
Disc Golf Pro Tour. All right. And Disc Golf Pro Tour isn't even at 100,000 yet. They're at 87,000.
I'm not worried about that.
You think they're growing by 400,000 before Jomez grows by 150,000?
Oh, I don't know about that. I'm just saying
there's not a chance.
I'm just saying they have the potential of like blowing up real quick if they kind of change the game a little bit on the media side. But
yeah, that's not happening.
That wasn't even one of the things I even want to talk about. Okay.
No.
The first thing I want to talk about is who this video is sponsored by. It's sponsored by the Heiser Club. And you might be thinking, what the heck is the Heiser Club? Well, I can tell you exactly what the Heiser Club is. We are doing, if you already are a member of our Patreon, you probably know that we are revamping our tiers, changing up some of our benefits for 2022. This will all come into effect January 1st. And The new thing is the Heiser Club. Joining the Heiser Club, we've got three different tiers. Silas can throw them up there too for you. So if you're watching, you can see. If you're not watching and you're listening to us, you can go to patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf and all the information will be down there. But we got three
is
tiers.
Is it up there now or is that January 1st will be live on there?
January 1st will be live. But you can also probably go on, where else have we posted? We posted in the Discord. So it really hasn't posted anywhere. So you guys are actually hearing it for the first time.
Yeah.
This is the first public. Yeah, non-Patreon people have heard it. So what we're going to be doing, the Heiser Club is essentially people that A, want to support Foundation Disc Golf and what we're doing over here. And then B, if there's things on this list that maybe incite you or get you riled up or get you fired up for some stuff, it's basically extra content, right? So it's a way of thinking of like a premium service, right? So we're basically, we're ESPN and our Patreon's ESPN Plus.
Boom.
Like
nice.
We're giving content out
Didn't
for free, but we also have premium content. So this is the kind of the premium content, if you will. So the member is the $5 per month, and that will give you access to monthly giveaway contests. Where, you know, it could be potentially a disc like this. So instead of you having to fight over the 14,000 people that are subscribed on this YouTube channel, you would just be fighting over. And it's also a contest, which is kind of sweet because then you can actually earn it.
Yeah, it's not a giveaway.
It's not a giveaway. Like you can actually, submit something that's good and win it, which I think is always more fun than just winning something on the free land. We also have the bonus weekly podcast, which right now is the mailbag. Who knows what that might turn into?
Yeah, we got something planned.
Who knows? And then we have bonus monthly videos. I don't know why I put plural, a bonus monthly video. And I think what we want to kind of do with the monthly video is I think we want to do a lot of battles. So a lot of head-to-head matches, like little six-hole matches, me versus you, Silas versus Connor, Trevor versus you, some like little like fun stuff. And who knows, when I'm on tour too, I might even film some stuff with some pros on tour, and we'll throw that in there as the bonus video for the members. Then you also have ad-free grip locked. That's pretty dope.
Yeah.
You're excited about that one?
Well, I mean, I still got to read the ad. It's just people won't have to hear me read the ad if they don't want to.
Yeah, if you don't want to hear the ads, you can get ad-free grip lock podcast episodes. And then obviously our Discord, if you're not a part of it, there's a lot of benefits on there.
It's been popping
there.
Off in the past few days.
Yeah, lots of benefits on there. Silas had his own little powwow with some of the Patreon members today on Discord. How'd that go, Silas?
Yeah, man, it went great. We had a good conversation, you know?
Good little chat. So you might get a chance to have a little one-on-one convo with Silas. You never know. The next tier is going to be the elite tier, which is $10 per month. On that, you get everything that the members get at $5, plus you get access to our Heiser Club store. You want to explain what the heck that is?
Yeah, the Heiser Club store is essentially where we're going to be putting exclusive merch for the Patreon. So Heiser Club branded stuff, some extra discs that we find laying around the warehouse, either from like previous runs, you know, custom stamp stuff, signed stuff. We'll be doing some signings here and there on there. It's just going to be like a get access to on the elite level.
Yeah, who knows? I might retire a disc and pull it out of my bag and put it on the store.
Yeah.
Or there might be something that was like super monumental that was done in a video and we put that on the store. Who knows? It could be anything. So that's just going to be a kind of cool store that you'll have access to. You also have a 10% discount code on foundationdisc.com, and you get also all the Discord benefits as well. The Hall of Fame tier. This is the highest tier that we have. It's $20 per month. You get everything that I just mentioned, and you get 5% more, so you get a 15% discount on foundationdisc.com. And also the big one here is you get early access to disc drops. So when we have those exclusive disc drops coming, and you don't want the stress of like having to try to get there and like hopefully you do everything really fast, and B, if you really, really care about the color of the disc that you want or whatever it may be, you get early access, no stress, go on, get what you want, move on.
Yeah. That's it.
That's
there it.
It
is.
We are looking at other things to add. So if you're interested in it or you have questions, drop in the comments down below on the YouTube video, or you can hit us up on Twitter or Facebook.
Not in the live chat,
not
in the actual
Facebook.
Comments.
Yeah, not Facebook. Don't do Facebook. I don't know why I said Facebook. Twitter, Discord, YouTube. Those are the three best ways of doing it. And any suggestions for benefits that we might be missing out that you might want to see, let us know. But again, thank you to everyone that supported us in 2021, all the Patreons, RIP Foundation Nation, RIP Concrete, RIP Marble, and RIP John Madden.
One other piece of business before we get into the podcast.
Sorry,
podcast
I don't
part.
Know what to say.
I didn't know you were about to go there. I thought
yeah,
we were going to.
Yes.
I thought you were about to make a joke and then
no,
you got serious.
No, I got very serious. Well, I was just thinking of all the good times as a kid playing Madden, man.
One other final piece of business is, if you've been a fan of the Foundation Podcast Network, you've noticed that this year we brought on an interview show, the Nick and Matt Show. Their contract was for 2021. In 2022, Nick of the Nick and Matt Show is planning on going on tour more. Matt of the Nick and Matt Show got a promotion and he's going to be on the road more. And both of them kind of had scheduling conflicts to where they don't know how frequently they'll be able to do the show and all of that. And they wanted to be able to go back on their own to be have freedom to where if they miss a few weeks or if they want to pop on a random episode on Thursday, they can do that on their own. And they also don't have the stress of advertisers expecting 3 or 4 episodes a month and X, Y, and Z, the type of stuff that, you know, kind of happened through our podcast, where we had to be like, hey guys, like, we need three this month. They don't have that stress anymore. They wanted all that freedom. And so it was a kind of a mutual agreement. You know, they are on to bigger and better things, and they'll be still continuing the Nick and Matt Show on their own YouTube channel in 2022. So if you're a fan of that show, definitely check that out.
Also, you know, we sometimes bounce in the live chat. Silas, we sometimes get crazy around here and read some of what live chat's going on. Yeah, what do you guys think of this? Because Scott Stokely obviously is in the news a lot recently.
Next year, prime candidate for Rookie of the Year in 2022.
He probably will be Rookie of the Year, which will be another hilarious thing. But he's been in the news, right? He did this awesome Christmas live party. I was able to jump on there. That was cool. He's obviously amped up the YouTube content as of recently, and he's going full force on tour next year. Someone said, hot take, Scott Stokely will place higher than Nick Carl at the end of 2022.
I would agree, because Scott Stokely's doing a full tour and Nick Carl's not doing a full
saying,
tour.
Okay, what
just
about
sheer number of
what
event,
about head to head? Because I think it's Stat Mando that you can compare two people and see head to head. What do you think head to head? Because obviously that was kind of the cop out of where you're just saying this guy's gonna play more events, he's gonna get
more points.
Sometimes
you gotta cop out, you know?
But
it's I haven't seen Scott Stokely play since his prime in the 90s. I've watched old YouTube videos. So it's tough to know what Scott Stokely we're about to see. I did see like the 30,000 putts in 60 days or whatever it is, where he's, you know, putting 750 times for 2 days and taking a day off. But in that video, he didn't exactly putt until the very end. He ran through like a box of 100 and missed four of them, which that was kind of impressive. But I don't know. It's tough to know. I can see Scott Stokely is more driven than most pros I see, but it's also tough to know like what's being presented online and what's happening behind the scenes. Mm. So like Nick Carl might not be posting what he's doing online, but he's grinding his face off behind the scene. And Scott Stokely, not saying this is happening, but Scott Stokely could be posting online and then turning the camera off and getting his car and driving back home and being like, well, I'll get the putts in tomorrow. You never know. You can't trust everything you see online. So early stance, I'll say I'm leaning towards Scott Stokely just because his experience on tour.
Yeah.
I'll take an official stance after Las Vegas. For one event, give me one event. I don't even know if they'll both be there. Give me one event to see Scott, and I'll be able to tell you if he's going to beat Nick Carl.
Yeah, I was going to say, is Scott better in, is he better in the open or in the woods? Because I'm thinking a lot of the courses Nick's gonna be playing is wooded, and I think that is he's better in the woods than like the Las Vegas,
yeah,
like open bomber. Like, I don't know. Is he playing any of the West Coast?
I think so. I think he's planning on trying to do. I think if Nick goes out and has a
successful
super hot
start,
he'll probably stay on the road.
Okay,
is what I would guess. I haven't talked.
Is he just rolling around in the Paul Macbeth RV? Is that the situation?
I'm not sure his plans.
Okay.
But I definitely think it'll be interesting to see Scott Stokely. I have a tough time with the current field. I saw he made some comment in a video, like, I'll show everyone how good the 90s players truly were.
I love that.
If I'm being honest, I have a tough time imagining him finishing top 10 at a tournament this year.
Was he finishing top 10 when?
Oh, in the 90s? Yeah. Okay. He was very competitive in his era. Let me find like a really good season for him.
Okay. Someone also said $1.99 donation from I Am One. New Girl is better than The Office. Come after me. I don't believe so, but I will also say New Girl is a very good show.
Here's the thing I'll
say. I love New Girl a lot.
I have heard about half as many people talk about New Girl as I heard about The Office.
That doesn't necessarily mean it's better.
Okay.
Just because more people have heard of it.
Not heard of it. Religiously watch it. The people I've heard watch New Girl, they go through phases. Like, Connor is in a New Girl phase right now. A month from now, he'll be back to The Office, and I guarantee you he's watched The Office three times as much as he watched New Girl.
I've never finished New Girl. I'll say this.
And have you finished The Office?
Three times.
I rest my case.
Yeah. But, you know, I like New Girl. I think I like, what's that guy's name?
I don't know.
Okay, I don't either. But I like him a lot. Someone wants to know, announcement on sponsored players. I think that will happen soon. And I don't know if I just teased that.
We're not trying to tease it. I said on Griplock that for people to start guessing, because I thought it'd be a fun game.
Oh, you said that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, let us know. What'd you say exactly?
I just said we had two players that we will be announcing at some point in the future, and I want people to start guessing who they are.
Oh, heck yeah. Let's do that. Guess if you're listening.
I'm not going to let you know if you get it right, but feel free to start guessing.
If you're watching or listening to this on YouTube, let us know in the comments who you think it is. And if you're listening to us, tweet us and let us know who it is. Let's go. What the heck? All right, let's jump into...
So the 1990... I just chose a random year for Scott Stokely. The 1997 World Championship, the year I was born, he came in second to Ken Climo. So, and I mean, this year, it's, I don't know if this is before the NTs existed, but I mean, he was winning A-tiers left and right. So
just crushing
in his it. In his heyday, the Des Moines Disc Golf Challenge was around back then. He won that. In his heyday, he was very, very good.
When do you think... Because already, top pros still talk about it. When do you think pros? Yeah. And I'm not using the word pros loosely. I'm literally talking about guys that, I mean, the pro tour is literally pretty in place now to where the only reason I'm playing the only reason I'm playing events outside the tour is simply financial reasons. It doesn't make sense for me to fly to California, play an event, and fly home for a week, and then fly back to California to play another event. It makes more sense for me to stay out there, right?
Yeah.
Financially. But then it's like when I'm out there, I might as well just jump in an event.
That's going on in between.
And maybe play some golf or do some stuff in between, some videos or whatever stuff in between. So how many people... pros will stop posting, like at what point will they stop posting about anything outside of the Disc Golf Pro Tour? Of like, hey, I just won this B tier event. Hey, I just won this A tier event. Hey, I just did this.
What level of pros are we talking?
Like, we're talking about the people that are...
Do like Paul, Rick, Eagle already do that right now?
I think some of them... I was going to say top pros don't Eagle do it, but post, I still think I've seen people post...
Eagle will post like he has like a Colorado, like some tournament in Colorado he plays every year. And like it's sentimental to him,
yeah.
That'll carry on because like it's a sentimental win. Mm. You know what I mean? So like sometimes that might mean more to a player. Like if Paul won the Wintertime Open again, he would probably post about that again because he won that, I don't even know how many years in a row.
But at what point is he not even playing it?
Well, it might not happen. I don't think it happened last year.
But that's my, at what point are you not even playing those events? Or do you think disc golf is just a different animal where, because I feel like...
Why would you not is my thing.
Because when you go...
Like, I mean, if you have an off weekend and you're already out there warming up.
Okay, well, why don't other
sports?
Why don't other sports do that?
NBA players play pickup ball.
That's not playing an official event.
But that's kind of what's happening, though. Is like, so eventually PDGA events are
won't
like...
you go do, like, wouldn't you... I'm seeing, like, people go and do, like, a fun doubles event. Or going and doing, like, some sort of charity event. I'm not thinking about, like... player, like there'll come a time, right, where like 5 years, 10 years from now, where when you're off season, you're not going like, oh well, I'm gonna go play this fun little C tier event.
I would imagine,
right? Or you don't
most of the top five aren't playing in the off season.
Yeah, I'm saying when will that start going all the way down? Do you think it's a money thing?
It's a money thing.
So you think people are just going C tiers to play just to get money?
There's some players. It depends on where you get to. There's
some
players
that people like to do it.
Yeah, there's some players that's just fun, but they aren't looking at it as that as competition. They're looking at it the same as like I show up to a weekly just to have fun. I'll show up to the local C tier because my buddy's running it, or all my local friends are playing in it, so I'm gonna just show up and have some fun. Because we've had players show up to like our B tiers and stuff like that. They're just in the area and just looking for fun. Like for instance, Chris Dickerson and Zach Melton for years would show up to the... We have this winter league called the Blue Ridge Area Winter League, the Brawl Series. And for years, they would show up, not because they're getting it like competitive outlet. It was just fun to them because I think it's just like how many people treat disc golf like a job and how many of them are still having fun with it.
Yeah.
Is the line.
Let's talk about majors real quick. Majors just got announced 2023. You want to list off where they are and
so
and all
I'm
that just stuff.
I'm only going to do the pro majors. Because they're like, I'm not going to do U.S. Masters and like that's the MPO and FPO major.
I think some people get confused too.
I'm not going to list the AM majors.
Yeah, either. I think some people get confused with this podcast sometimes when we do talk disc golf, of where we're like kind of talking about the umbrella of disc golf, where it's like we really are focusing more on like the pro side.
Yeah.
So like we have nothing against the amateur side or all that stuff, but like when
the Masters side.
But, yeah, or the Masters. But when I say majors, like I'm just thinking. Like
I was just clarifying that before mention.
Because someone's going to say, like, why didn't you mention the amateur, blah, blah. And
it's why don't you mention this?
It's like, well, because what are we going to say? We're not playing in it or watching it.
Yeah. And so the Worlds in 2023 is coming back to Smuggler's Notch in Vermont.
I love that.
One thing I'll say about Worlds that I've been liking, kind of, it's starting to shape up this way, it seems like, is like, for instance, this year, Worlds is in Emporia.
Mm-hmm.
It's been in Emporia before.
Okay.
I think several times. Smuggler's Notch. It's been in Smuggler's Notch before.
Okay.
I think that is the type of thing that adds to the prestige, is you remember when Worlds or something like that comes back to the same course. So I would like Worlds as a rotating major, I like. I feel like we're going to debate about rotating majors later. Worlds as a rotating major, I like, but I like it if it is like goes East Coast, Midwest, West Coast or something, and then Europe or something like that, to where you're like, oh, we can remember when Barsby won and it's Smuggler's Notch, and we have memories of what they did on certain holes and stuff like that. It helps add to the excitement and hype versus.
But you only have so many courses.
You only need so many courses. You need five.
Oh, you just want like every 5 years.
Elite courses that we're just tweaking also, here and there. We got Emporia Country Club, Smuggler's Notch. Pick somewhere on the West Coast. Let's go back to Beaver State Fleeing Courses or something. I don't know. Pick something on the West Coast, and then let's go to the Beast in Europe.
We also talked about, too,
four good courses.
We also talked about, too, like every 2 years.
Yeah, which I don't think that's going to happen. I like the idea, but it's not going to happen. So Worlds going back to Smuggler's Notch. Scrolling down past AM Worlds, past
Masters. They don't have everything just at the top?
No. They have a little article about each one.
Oh.
U.S. Women's is going to Burlington, North Carolina, which is sick because that's like 2 hours away.
So that is...
it's at Cedar Rock Park, which I have played a few tournaments there.
That is their USDGC.
Yes, for right now. Which is weird because Throw Pink Women's, I think, is going to continue to happen, and Throw Pink Women's will probably have more media, more hype than U.S. Women's every year. Which, it's something interesting that the PGA is going to look at.
Yep.
But for 2023... Not looking like they're gonna consider Throw Pink Women's a major for them.
Okay.
And I think the final one that is announced, because USDGC always at the same course.
Yep.
Final one, PDGA Champions Cups going to the D-Glo courses in Michigan.
Which is
Toboggan.
Toboggan. Yeah.
Yeah, which I'm not a fan of. I mean, I posted about it on Twitter.
Yeah, explain it, because right now USDGC, same spot every year.
Yes.
Worlds rotates.
Yes.
European Cup. Open,
same spot every time it happens.
Same spot.
Yes.
So you have two tournaments already, same spot every year. Why do you think Champions Cup needs to be same spot?
I think it adds to the prestige of the event. I think right now the issue that I have is similar to what I just talked about. Worlds is, for instance, D-Glo. D-Glo is an established event at that course.
Mm-hmm.
It happens every year.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is the major courses should be major courses. You're not going to have a Pro Tour stop at Winthrop Gold. You don't have a Pro Tour stop at the Beast in Finland. We see that course once a year, and it's a major. So to me, we don't see WR Jackson. It's a great major course. To me, let's make that the major course for the Champions Cup, have it go there every year. And I personally think Worlds courses, the year Worlds comes, there shouldn't be a Pro Tour stop there. Hopefully in the future, there's never a Pro Tour stop there. So the only time we're seeing the Worlds courses is when Worlds arrives, because I think that adds to the hype and the prestige of the event.
I agree with you there. The only issue is you're now limiting yourself. Like, the number of pro level courses right now is not high enough.
Maybe down the road
where you have tons of courses to choose from, sure.
I think we have more courses than you'd think to choose from.
But you have to think about more than just like, oh yeah, this course is difficult. You got to think more on the Pro Tour side of, do they have amenities? Do they have good Wi-Fi? Do they have...
That's what I'm saying. Why are we rotating? You find the course, park there.
Oh, you're talking about Worlds. But what I'm saying...
No, I'm saying for the majors, like USDGC, they found it, they parked there. The Beast in Finland, probably even a better location than USDGC. They found it, they parked there.
I think
And those events, when we come there, the whole crowd can get excited because we... Whole 17 at USDGC, there's nothing like it.
But I think that's what you're missing, is by being able to move, you really can kind of like inject a huge thing into that local community by having a major show up at a tournament, at a course. Like, that is the only thing you're missing. And if you only have one major that rotates, I don't know. I mean, I think down the road, it probably doesn't matter as much. But I think right now, if you're able to say, like, if we were able to say, like,
what does having a major come into town do differently than having a pro tour come into town?
It should do a lot more, you would think.
But what does it right now?
I don't know.
Nothing.
I don't know, but it should do a lot more, you would think.
Actually, I would argue that as of we currently stand, it does less coming into town because the PDGA runs the majors and expects the local community to take care of it, whereas
if you go that way, if you go that way.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at a community like Utah, when the Pro Tour was there, it was run smooth, Utah Open, hyped up. Worlds rolls into town. A lot of negativity got thrown at the community,
I'm not even thinking about that as an argument.
Well, you said local community.
No. I was saying like if you bring the world championship to New London,
yeah,
right. I'm talking about the amount of people that in the community that would. I'm not talking about like, oh my gosh, people are gonna come out and do work and stuff. I'm talking about just the buzz. It's the whole reason why like the NFL. When you look at how much money the NFL or the Super Bowl generates for those cities, when the Super Bowl goes to your city, it generates so much money for that city.
That's what I think.
That's
world
kind of like
rotate.
The thought is like when a major comes in to a disc golf town or whatever it may be, it should generate a crap ton of income. So that way, when it leaves the local community, this golf community is in a way better spot. Way more players, way better facilities, courses, whatever it may be. It should like kind of shoot a shot of adrenaline into that spot, and then when it leaves, it left a mark. If that makes sense. And if you only have that in one spot, you're never really getting that when you bounce around.
So do we sacrifice the hype, prestige, all of that, the positivity of staying at one course?
Well, the question is how many do you need, right? So
rotating major.
So you look at other sports that have majors.
Here's the question I'll ask.
Okay.
What separates now Champions Cup from Worlds? Other than the title World Championship.
Well, you already know my thought on the Worlds thing. That's why I think Worlds needs to be 2 years. I think it can't happen
every single
year.
But if it's not 2 years, what separates a Champions Cup from Worlds?
The only thing I would think of off the top of my head is Worlds would bring in the best players in the entire world.
And a major isn't? Another major?
A major... When I think of Worlds, okay? When I think of Worlds in the grand scheme of the World Championship, I'm thinking people that are playing... And it's a different kind of element too, because it's an individual sport, right? But when I'm thinking of like the World Championship, it's like equivalent to like the Olympics almost, right?
Sure.
And that it's tough because golf, tennis, all like the best players play on the same tour, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess in disc golf,
I would say in disc golf.
You might have people in Europe that can't afford to come over and do a full tour on the Disc Golf Pro Tour,
mm-hmm.
and they are just going to come over for Worlds. That in the disc golf world right now, if they were picking out of all the majors to go to, obviously European Open being there, but if they're picking out all the majors to go to, they'd probably pick Worlds over
USDGC. I would say the ones,
and over Champions Cup,
the
right?
Players that are good enough to actually have a shot at winning Worlds and be consistently up top are going to, when everything opens back up from COVID and all of that, they're going to be over here for a lot of Pro Tour events and stuff like that.
Here's the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
World Championship? Oh, gosh, it's so weird. The World Championship, the qualifications for that should be different than the qualifications for... the other majors.
Sure. I think
like the world championship, like the thing should be, they should figure out if UDIS world rankings is how they want to do it or whatever they want to do it. They should be like, this is the top 70 players in the world.
Absolutely.
And then you could have Champions Cup. This could be kind of cool. Champions Cup could be kind of like what the PGA does with the PGA championships, where they actually have, teaching professionals, essentially, it qualify to get into the major. And so, like, there are a lot of people, not a lot, but there are a handful of people in that tournament that aren't touring pros, but they have in their kind of own qualifications over here, they have
earned
gone.
The right to be there.
So that could be cool. Like if you want to do like an amateur side, right? Where Champions Cup is like the top 120 players in whatever ranking you want to do. And then you add in the top amateur players in the world. And the amateurs get to qualify on their own little qualification thing to get over here. Then you can kind of make that interesting. But Worlds sounds to me, Worlds, you got to have the best players. It's got to be the best players in the world.
Well, that's what I'm saying is when I look at USDGC, I think is the most prestigious major with everything except for the title. And when I think, why is that? There's two factors. There's a qualification process throughout the entire year where you have to place very good mm-hmm. at high-level events against good competition to make it to USDGC, and it's the history of the course.
Yeah.
So that's what, to me, a Worlds at Emporia or a Worlds at, you know, Smuggler's Notch or somewhere it's been has more prestige and stuff like that and gets me more excited than a Worlds somewhere it's never been before.
Here's another thing. Another point, and then we'll move on. USDGC. If you win USDGC, you automatically qualify for
yes.
life.
Yes.
Right? Worlds, that shouldn't be like that. So okay. Nate Doss
mm-hmm.
doesn't qualify for Worlds unless he's one of the top players at the world that year.
Okay.
So that kind of makes it to some of these other majors, especially as disc golf goes more and more, right? And now USDGC now has, let's say, they now have 20 people. Because how many people right now have won USDGC and still playing? Or still like showing up to play. I know like King Climo, like he just did his last one, right? Imagine if there were 10 or 15 King Climos of where they're literally not playing any events. They're just showing up to USDGC and playing that one, right?
Yeah.
That makes that tournament special because you have all the past winners still playing, but it also makes the field worse. Worlds, those people, I don't care if you won world title 20 years ago. It's literally the top 70 or 80 or whatever it is at that time in the world, boom. And then that way you can kind of have, there's all sorts of ways of making distinctions, but all right.
The other thing I want to bring
up. Interesting thing.
One more question I want to ask is in 2023, will Green Mountain Championship still happen? I think that's an issue that I've had too. Is like Worlds comes to Peoria, and you go Ledgestone. We have a month, and then we're right back to the same tournament.
I think there needs to be a decent sized gap, but also there needs to be I'm okay with it. Actually, I kind of go back on what I thought initially. I was like, no.
It's like the A tier Worlds.
Hold on, hear me out. Initially, I was like, no, a major shouldn't be at a course that already has a tournament. I was on the same plane as you, but I think I'm back against that because I think they can do stuff. If they can do stuff to that tournament, that course layout and everything to really make it feel like a bigger event.
So they change the course.
And they change the course. They make the course
harder.
Sure,
absolutely.
Make the course
but
harder.
Then they're not playing the same course. Like going to Emporia.
Correct. It's technically the same course.
But it's not.
But it's not.
Like Emporia, they're redoing Jones Gold.
There's different tee pad. Like they move all the tee pads back 50. Yeah, exactly. Like Jones Gold right now.
You play
it
per
EDO.
Yeah,
you can shred Jones Gold right now. If they made it to where a good score was like 5 or 6 under, that's a completely different tournament.
They're going
to
be combining Jones East and Jones West, which they do for Jones Gold.
That's a completely different tournament. So I'm cool with that now. I was against it, but I think I'm cool.
Well, yeah, I think if they change the course like Emporia is, then yeah, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying like
that's the only way I think it happens.
But that's not what's
happening. I don't think you can go to the same exact course and play the same exact course.
That's what's happening.
Yeah, I'm not a
huge... Ledgestone, we roll up to Ledgestone. A month later, we roll up to the same tournament, but now it's Worlds.
And there's nothing different other than just the banners.
The banners and stuff like that are different, and we're trying to hype it up.
I would like to have something changed of where it's like, we moved this tee pad back 30. We made OB this tighter to the green. We did all this.
I'm fine with that, because then it's
really,
not the same course.
Yeah, because... Yeah. You really want to make it to where it's like, you know.
Yeah.
It's tricky. It's tricky. Okay. Last thing. Let's talk about something that, and then we'll open up the phone calls because I know people want to call in. Sport agencies, accountants, shoe companies, Bushnell, We're starting to see more and more companies come that are very, very specific to disc golf. I don't want to spend too much time on this.
Okay.
Don't want to spend too much time on this. But this is the only thing I will say, and maybe you can add to it if you have anything to add. Because this was someone that was on the Nick and Matt show last night.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick thankfully asked the question that I was curious when I was listening to this guy talk about his being an accountant, essentially a tax person for a lot of players on the tour. My question was like, what are you doing that I can't, that someone else couldn't do?
Like, what are you doing disc golf specific?
Why, if I'm a disc golfer that is like, crap, I don't know how to do my taxes. I'm making $100,000 now. I went from making $10,000 to now I'm making $100,000. I don't know what the heck I'm supposed to do. Why should I go and give you my service? Business versus some other accountant? And Nick asked that question, and the answer he said was basically like, we'll work harder and we'll care more, which it's almost kind of like one of those things of where it's like you ask someone like, you know, they're down at halftime and you're like, what are you guys going to do differently next in half? You're like, well, we're going to come out and we're just going to play harder. We're going to give it 110%. They don't actually really give you any sort of like tactile information of what they're going to do differently to get a better success. They just tell you like, well, we're just going to care more, so we're going to be better. So my question, this is my only concern, and this is the only thing I would advise. I don't know how many people are going to be listening to this that are on the pro tour that are in situations of like, should I get an agent? Do I need an accountant? Do all this stuff? Is don't just join something because other people are doing it. Make sure you do your research and reach out to that person and get a good idea of what that person's going to give to you. Because I think sometimes in disc golf, you can fall into this trap of, well, they're the official shoe of disc golf. It's got to be better than every other shoe. And without you like doing your research or anything like that, you kind of just fall into that, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like doing your own research and just checking it. That's my only thing. Especially on the agent side is the only thing. The agent side is the only thing I care about, or the agent side is the thing that like I care about mostly, because the agents can actually really screw you over.
Yeah.
Where the accountant side, like for the most part, like if you go to a good accountant and you pay them enough money, they're going to do a good job.
Yeah, I think someone brought up that you didn't understand accounting because someone who cares more is going to save you more money. That's not what Brody's saying. He's basically saying like, just because I'm saying I am a disc golf lawyer doesn't mean that I'm going to like
care more,
do like, anything extra. Just, yeah, and then if I ask you, oh, you're a disc golf lawyer, what can you do for me? Like, what does disc golf lawyer mean? I just say, oh, I'm a care more than a normal lawyer.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I have my best friend's a lawyer. If he can do the same stuff, I think he's going to care more. Like it's not a tangible thing that you can offer.
The caring only matters at the end of the day. Like that only matters is if someone's doing a bad job, right? Yeah. Like if someone does a bad job because they don't care, then don't give them business. But like there's some people that I've worked with that could care less about me at all, but they still do a good job. They don't care what I'm doing, they don't ask me how my family's doing or anything like that. They do the job that they know they can do and they get it done. I don't know. One thing I'll say though
is we're just in a spot in disc golf where as far as like products go, like Bushnell you brought up,
mm-hmm.
where their disc golf's not big enough yet for
pup and suds.
Disc golf's not big enough yet for outside companies like, well, Bushnell is an outside company. But for outside companies to develop a whole disc golf thing, mm-hmm. to where a company like Bushnell can realize, hey, if we reprogram this older rangefinder to say feet and call it disc golf, we can not take advantage because it is advantageous to us as disc golfers, but in their eyes, be able to market very easily to disc golfers. Same thing with shoes, same thing with, like you're saying, accountants, lawyers, whatever, to where it's not big enough yet to where a normal sports agent that deals with NBA players, MMA fighters, MLB, all of that, cares about a disc golf athlete yet. To where now I can just be like, hey, I'm willing to do this because we're not at this level, but we're at a level where we're starting to need that stuff. And I think all Brody's saying is just like, if you're in a situation where something's being advertised as better simply because they know what disc golf is, do a little research, because you know, you might end up be like, okay, yeah, you know, you might know the sport I play, but
see, that's the thing, that's where
does that separate you?
That is the perfect time. If you know something, right, at that moment, if you know something that you can do to help people, I feel like you would say it. You just, or give like an example.
Yeah.
Right? Of like, oh, well, we know that disc golfers live in their car, and so we can use that as a tax deduction, as that's their living space, and then we can do that. I don't
like, because we understand the ins and outs of the sport, we can do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. My thing is like, my person that does my taxes, I just feel like I've never come into a point of where they're like, I don't understand what you, and also they ask questions. I don't know. That was just a little tangent. I'm just saying, I've seen people screwed in the past, mostly on the agent side. I think the accountants, it's like,
accountant's an accountant.
Yeah. If you go to one dude versus another dude, if you're making $100,000 and you go to one dude versus another dude, you might save a couple thousand dollars going with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that big of a deal. The agent side, that's where I've seen bad stuff happen, where like a deal comes in for $50,000 and you should have gotten $40,000 of that, or no, you would have gotten $45,000 of that, but they come in and they tell you the deal was only $40,000.
Mm.
Like, I've seen that kind of side happen, right? Or they just decide not to push you, whatever. The agent side, I would say, is a lot more dangerous than the accountants. Like, the accountants, at the end of the day, like, they legally cannot do anything to save you more money than someone else.
As long as they both know the same amount.
And that, at the end of the day, is making sure you hire someone for your service that knows what they're doing. Same thing as like, you probably shouldn't take your car to someone that you don't trust is going to be able to know how to fix it.
Yeah.
So agents can screw you. Accountants can't really screw you if they know what they're doing. I don't know. All right. I don't know why we're not giving legal advice. Silas, are you a lawyer?
I'm not.
It is also easy to do your own taxes if you don't have a crazy amount of stuff.
If you don't
have a crazy amount of stuff.
For disc golfers, I don't think it's nearly as easy as you would think, just because, for instance, if you play at the Battle for Bedford, our tournament, and you cash more than $600, you get a W-9 from us and then a 1099. And then, you know, you might get that from seven different places. You might end up with 10 income streams.
But then you also might have like five different sponsors giving you money.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You might have 10 to 15 income streams.
There's a lot of different things.
But you only made $100,000, to where things get very interesting of like, it's not as simple as I got my W-2. Here you go, IRS. Oh, sick. Here's my child deductions and my mortgage. Boom. Here's my refund.
Yeah,
it does. It's not that, and they're also all self-employed, so that makes things even more interesting.
And this wasn't a knock on anyone. My big thing is like, I don't want to see people get screwed over with money, right? Especially players that have gone from no money into money. I don't want to see those guys get screwed over. And my whole thing is just like, make sure, just double check, ask all the questions, ask other people as well. And just make sure before you just say, oh, well, like everyone is doing it this way, so that is must be the right way of doing it. Just double check and make sure. Okay. That's all I have there. Silas, should we take some calls?
Let's take some calls.
I just hate seeing people get screwed out of money. That's my, you know me.
Mm-hmm.
You know me. I hate it, Silas.
Other people have brought up a good question of multiple state payouts and things like that. That's something that a lot of pro athletes have to deal with. The Pro Tour, I believe, from what I've understood, the Pro Tour handles all the money, so that basically when you're playing on the Pro Tour, you're getting payouts directly from the Pro Tour. So then all of that's coming just from Pro Tour HQ, to where if you cash at a Pro Tour in Texas, it's no different than cashing at a Pro Tour in Oregon.
I think that's how, that's interesting, because that's not...
Because in MLB, NBA, well, stuff that, like that...
You're not winning money when you go to those events. You have contracts.
No, but players do get taxed. I forget what Trevor has talked about. He was a
sports manager. When they play in different...
Yeah, different... Some players, like if you get paid for playing in Georgia, all the like 40 different states, your taxes are in 40 different states.
Mm-hmm.
And it's apparently a nightmare. And apparently, some of the like people who work for, let's say, the Dallas Cowboys as like an equipment manager,
yeah,
it might be a similar thing where like you get paid in X amount of different states.
No, I see.
I don't understand exactly how it all worked, but
yeah, Todd said it. State tax versus federal tax.
Yeah, state tax is what's very interesting.
And that's where accountants come into hand because they should know all
that. That's why
I'm
not
an
accountant.
They should know all that stuff.
That's why I'm sitting behind the mic.
You want to spit out the number for people listening, might not be watching, but listening?
Yeah, it's 434-218-3602.
Dude, I have some short shorts on.
We do have a caller.
I have some short shorts on. Okay. Hello.
Hey, it's Artie from Missouri.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Just have a contractual question. Looking for kind of a realistic answer. How many or what kind of revenue would Foundation have to see to start thinking about possibly sponsoring a tour player?
We have two players that we are currently under contract with that we'll be announcing in February, and we're still talking to some other players as well. So we're already there.
Oh, cool. I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah, you'll see the announcement for two of the players for sure. If we do sign anyone else, we'll add them probably to the same announcement.
Yeah, I hope he'll make it
all one announcement. So yeah, we're already there, and I mean it's I think part of also just continuing to help people be able to go out and make a living doing the thing they love to do.
Awesome. Well, love the content, guys. Keep it up.
Hey, appreciate it, man. Take care. Someone just said I look buff, and I literally was just texting Kelsey before this podcast saying I almost puked when I looked at myself in the mirror after I got out of the shower. You know how like it's do we have another call? Because I was about to go somewhere.
No, you're good.
Okay. You know how like if you have a dog or a brother, sister, or nephew, niece, someone that you're constantly seeing all the time.
Yeah, you don't notice changes.
You don't notice changes. Today was like, I just all of a sudden hadn't seen myself for a year and I just saw myself. And I was like, what the
that,
heck?
So,
because I didn't notice. I didn't notice anything. But today,
that happened
all of a sudden,
to me last year. I didn't.
I like finally hit a breaking point. I didn't like, really. Enough's
what
enough.
What happened to me was, like, you know, you look at yourself in the mirror every day, brushing your teeth, whatever. Did not realize how much weight I put on until I decided to watch one of our YouTube videos. And I saw myself from like the perspective of another person. I was like, holy crap, I'm fat. And I lost 20 pounds.
When it hits you, man, it hits you hard.
Yeah.
It hits you hard.
All right. We do have another caller.
You are live on Debate Night. What's up?
Hey, how's it going? It's Danny from Columbus. Go Bucks.
Hey, go Bucks.
I had two debate topics. The first is majors should change courses. Otherwise, you don't incentivize new courses to be built, like the Eagles place in Missouri.
That's a good point.
Second debate topic, Hunter's definitely going to break 100.
Heck
he just got a putt.
Ooh.
Also, heck yeah.
I will tell you, are you getting the audio from them only in your right ear? Okay. I will tell you this. We did film his first attempt. It will be coming out next week.
Next Wednesday.
So we'll see if you still have that same energy. And then, yeah, I agree with you on, I don't think all majors need to sit in one place. I think this is what I would love. I would love to see a four major system and then Worlds like every 2 years. And you could have like two of those majors set in stone. Boom, that's where they are. And then you can have two other majors. Maybe one in Europe floats around in Europe, and then one in the States floats around as well. That would be dope.
What I'll say in regards to
the
motivation.
Do you want all majors to just...
No, I want Worlds to rotate.
But in my mind,
if Worlds
is not...
four majors and
my
one...
My mind is Worlds, is it should not be a major.
Yeah, well, your mind, that's the PDGA is never going to do that. So if there's four majors and one of them is Worlds, I think that the other three should be stationary. And I think that the motivation behind putting in championship level courses will be getting the Pro Tour there.
Mm.
And then as the Pro Tour establishes, you know, that course is a bigger and bigger thing, maybe eventually Worlds can add it into its rotation once the course has some history to it as well. But I don't think that any course designer's motivation is to immediately get now like AmWorlds. I think AmWorlds is a great option of like we put this course in, you know, 2 years from now, let's get an AM Worlds here. And then, you know, now that we know the area and everything can accommodate this amount of people and also the course can accommodate this level of competition, now let's look at getting Pro Worlds or something in. To me, that's kind of how it works, is the initial motivation behind courses is like amateur majors and the Pro Tour.
Okay.
No, that's a good point. I think Worlds traditionally has two courses as well, which limits certain places, but I'm excited for a tricked up toboggan for that major.
Yeah, I think too with Worlds, it'll be interesting to see if courses continue to evolve, where we see courses that have that nice mixture. Like Waco, in my opinion, if they just had more land at Waco, that could be a really good Worlds course, because it has almost 9 holes that are out of the woods and like 9 holes in the woods. Because I think a lot of times the two course system at Worlds is simply because they don't want to go to one course and it be like heavily favored for a specific style of golfer. And they want to have it to where like you have to play both styles, which I 100% agree and appreciate. But I think until more courses can get like that, you're going to have two courses. Like you're going to have to find spots that have a wooded course, because there are very few courses on tour where you do get that sense of like, I'm in the woods, I'm playing woods golf, I'm out in the open, now I'm having to throw big hyzers and stuff. So, yeah. Hey, appreciate you calling in, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, have a good one. Emporia's all open. That's true.
Jones has some, it doesn't have wooded holes, but.
It really only has one wooded hole. And in that sense, it's like one wooded tunnel shot. It's the hole after the par 5 where you throw out of the woods and then you land and then you like throw into like a tunnel shot.
Right now,
makes the point. Emporia, I take it back. Emporia is only one. Well, no, because it's going to be Jones too. And Jones doesn't really have any woods either. Yeah, so I take my point back.
I think that one of
that might be dynamic disc.
I think one of the issues that Worlds is running into right now is just the lack of bids.
Yes.
To where like there
How
might
many
only
people
be
can actually host it.
There might only be 3 towns that bid for it and only one can actually host Worlds that year. Mm. And it's like we don't have a choice but to go here.
Do they do play? Yeah, that's the other thing I don't like. I don't like how there's like 2 pools in Worlds where like half the field's playing one course and the other half's playing another course.
That's just because they want to allow as many people as possible.
Yeah.
If they did your idea of 70, it to
gosh,
70
it'd be
people.
Litty. It'd be lit. We'd get lit up here, Silas.
Yeah, because that's another reason they do the 2 courses is A pool, B pool.
You can get more people.
Then you flip.
But are they getting more people because... Here's the other question. Are they getting more people because it makes the tournament better? Are they getting more people because they really do care about those people and they want those people to play in the tournament? Or are they putting more people on there because they want the money?
You know, the world will never know.
All right. Unless someone calls in from the Worlds Committee.
Maybe.
We got someone? Yep. Hello, yep. You're live. What's up?
Hey guys, enjoy the show. Calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Had a question for you about Nico, unrelated to where he might go, but with the parting of Westside and himself, what do you think is the biggest detriment to his game? Is it his attitude on the course or just simply his play? I know he's been in the game a long time, but just curious what might be hurting his chances in going somewhere like Innova or Discraft.
Yeah, I think when I initially was talking about this earlier, I was thinking along the wrong lines, right? I was thinking along the lines of like a team and how I was saying like there are people on NBA teams, there are people on NFL teams, there are people on hockey teams that do stuff off the course or off the field or off the ice or whatever it may be. And that generally doesn't, unless it like becomes like, unless it's like a legal matter, right? Unless they're doing something that's breaking the law, that generally doesn't come into play with their contracts, right? Now, obviously there are some things about like good locker room guys and not good locker room guys, right? And that comes into play. Like Antonio Brown, for example, is someone that tons of talent, but teams are afraid of him because he comes in and might blow up in a locker room. But when it comes that I thought was the analogy. And I was like, man, I don't really understand. Like if he was on a football team, like I don't see why anyone would let that person go. But this kind of goes almost to like Justin Thomas went through something like this where he lost a sponsor. And that's how I think you have to kind of view it is you have to view it as, and again, we don't have any sort of information about why, right? They didn't come out with any reason why they...
Well, they haven't even officially said if they let him go or he left. It's assumed they let him go just because he struggled with keeping a sponsor in the past.
Okay. But there hasn't been anything of like why.
No.
Okay. The only thing I can think of is when you are coming at, when you're coming from the sponsor side of things, your name is attached to that person. And a lot of times people will care more about who that person is as a person versus what they do on the field, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Where like the NFL, there are some terrible people in the NFL, and there might you might even know they're a terrible person, but they're really freaking good at the position that they play on your team that you love, and so you kind of give them a pass.
Yeah.
Where here, it's like you're kind of on your own, and also the sponsor, it's like...
The sponsor's not a team.
They're not a team. It directly relates to like the reason why there's most sponsors, I would almost say 99.9% of the people that are sponsored is because they want that person to help generate more money for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole reason, right?
Yeah.
And so if you feel like that person is not doing that,
I think one of the things
it's a weird spot, man. It's a weird spot.
Nico's run into this issue over his career several times where he's just bounced around every sponsor under the sun. You know, I believe his uncle is either an owner or some connection to Gateway. So that's kind of where his career started. When he switched to Prodigy, Innova, all these different companies he went to. He a lot of times like still wanted to putt with his wizard. He went like open bag for a little bit. He was sponsored by some company out of Canada. I don't remember what it was. Daredevil Disc, I think. He's jumped around a lot, and it's tough to know because they never exactly straight up say why. Mm-hmm. But I think Nico is such a polarizing figure that companies are looking. He's always, since like 2009, he's been one of the top players in the world. 2009, he was the top player in the world. He's probably even in part of the top before then. So his play-wise, he's always been someone that companies want because of his play. But then he's such a polarizing figure because of what he's become known for outbursts and, you know, even like in press interviews, telling people to like, you know, come after him, whatever, like a lot of things that Nico does both on the course, but like off the play and off the course, make it where a company has to like take a step back sometimes and be like, is it worth continue with him? So my personal opinion, I think that's kind of what's going on here just because of the history, because he had an incredible
he's also under an insane microscope.
And yes.
And we talked about this earlier of if you go out to a Pro Tour event and you watch live like players go through, you will see some players where you're like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that person just did that. With Nico, if he does anything, it's going to be talked about. It's going to be shown.
Well, because it gets clicks.
And yeah, and it's and unfortunately, he has thrown himself. It's kind of like the Ndamukong Suh. When Ndamukong Suh in the NFL, anything he did wrong was like everyone was blasting about it. So, at the end of the day, like Nico still is doing that. So technically, he can control it by not doing it, right? You can't really post him blowing up or doing something crazy on the course if he doesn't do it. But he does kind of get an unfair shake sometimes because there are a lot of players out on tour that do stuff. And these are also top players too that either no one talks about or like people are just willing to kind of just be like, oh, he's just like in the moment right now. Where to me, like some of the stuff that Nico does, like, man, I rewatched Waco not too long ago and watching him play that final round, like, gosh, like I wish more I do wish that we had more pros that had that fire and passion that he shows and aren't so robotic and act like they don't like care. I don't know. So it's a give and take. It's a fine line.
I think Nico always wears his heart on his sleeve and it's gotten him in trouble, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just that he cares as much as other players. He just shows it more than other players. And in some ways that he shows it, it's not accepted.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Even though other players are doing it as well.
Yes.
So, yeah, appreciate you calling in, man.
Sweet. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, take care. My Sue thing, the reason I brought up Sue is like, yeah, Sue is a dirty player. Like, my point with Sue, though, is like, there are other people in the NFL. If you talk to NFL players, that will tell you like, oh, that guy was one of the dirtiest players ever. Mm-hmm. And you would never know that because it was never, the media never talked about it. The fans never talked about it.
Yeah.
Like, so that's where it's like certain players, unfortunately, Grayson Allen, for example.
I was about to bring him up.
Every single time Grayson Allen
even
did
if he
anything,
accidentally tripped someone even where it was a clear accident, it was intentional because it's Grayson Allen.
Yeah. Like, so there are some people that just unfortunately sometimes, and a lot of times too, those people do feed into it and kind of make it worse, but yeah, it is what it is. So all right, the Nico situation, I hope the best for him though, like honestly,
I hope he
day,
I hope
like,
he signs with Innova or goes back to Prodigy. Or really what I think is going to happen and what I really want to see happen is I want Nico with Gateway. I think that could be insanely good for both, for all parties involved.
Yeah,
I think take another call or two.
Yeah, we'll take a couple more calls if we got people lined up. All right, we got another one. Hello, you're on. What's up?
Hey, I was wondering what you guys thought about some majors such as, for example, the Japan Open, or in the past, I believe the Australian Open has been a major.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of those really add just a different flair, even if they're not consistently on tour. Mm-hmm. I particularly really like the Japan Open because it made pros deal with these 150-gram discs that they normally don't have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really cool spin on a major. And I was wondering what you guys thought about things such as that.
So this kind of goes back to our talk on the majors and stuff. Like ideally you want the best players playing in these majors. And right now, if you had a major in the Australian Open or you had a major in Japan Open, the field that you would get would not be I don't think it would be that great of a field. Like how many
people? The top 10 would be there.
Yeah, but how many?
Maybe even the top 15.
And back in the day, that's probably fine because you're probably like those are the only people that can win. But it's going to continue to get to where more and more people can win majors and can contend.
Yeah.
And so right now the money I don't think is there financially for a lot of people for it to make sense. My guess with the Japan Open is, did players use that as like almost a trip where they would like go out there? They didn't. No one just flew out there for the week and flew back, is what I'm saying. There might be some people, but my guess is people probably use that as like a trip vacation kind of thing, right?
Well, I think they would probably go for like a week and a half, but yeah. Like they would, like when the Australian Open happened, I got to go in 2017. What a lot of players did is they went to Taiwan because there's an A tier there first.
Yeah.
Spent a week in Taiwan.
Yeah, that's my
then
point.
Then went to Australia for a week.
My point was like they figured out other stuff to do. I just think right now you would have a lot of really good players that would look at that plane ticket and be like, I don't know if it's worth me going. And that's, you just don't want majors.
I don't like majors
to be limited.
Bringing that. I don't like them bringing it back as majors. I'd love to see a Pro Tour stop.
That would
at
be
the
sick.
Japan Open or
that
Australian
would be
Open.
Sick. Yeah.
Something like that. Bring it to the Pro Tour to where players will still travel for it. It's still a big event. Player, you know, companies will still want their presence there, but it's not a major. Also, the Japan Open, the 150-gram disc, I'm pretty sure that law in Japan got changed to where if it did come back, they'd be back to normal discs. So that was a big allure of the Japan Open. But
what is the, is it Trevor that thinks the Kona Piche doesn't count as a major? And you do?
Trevor does think it, but I mean, it was a major.
No, but you
Trevor
don't.
Says Kona Piche is a fake major.
Trevor thinks it's a fake major. But why does he say that?
Just because it happened once.
But was it because there was a lot of people? Like, I think you're going to get in the same situation.
No,
because
the European Open was basically the Kona Piche and European Open were supposed to rotate back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be European Open, then the Kona Piche Open. European Open, Kona Piche. But for some reason, it went European Open, Kona Piche, European, or something like that.
Gotcha.
Or okay, maybe Australian mixed in.
That's not a big deal. I just think if you do like something where it's like Japan Open and then the major that major doesn't exist for a couple years and the field at the Japan Open wasn't that good and you want, let's say Drew Gibson wins it.
Yeah.
People aren't going to be like, Drew Gibson's won one major. They're going to say Drew Gibson won like this fake major.
I think it's who wins it because yeah. European Open had the same field as Kona Piche Day pretty much to a T, but since Eagle won it, people want to take a major away from Eagle, whereas if Paul would have won it, they give the major to Paul or Rick.
You don't want to put that. Yeah, I don't,
it depends on who wins.
I think that's where you get a little weird situation there. So, did you have anything else to add to that or no?
No, just want to get your guys' thoughts on it. Thanks for
Heck
talking.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in. I would love though to have events over there.
Like, absolutely.
I think that's incredible.
And there is a desire to have more events over there. It's just COVID right now, obviously. But someone actually brought up they should do country first country teams. That does happen. It's called the President's Cup.
The Ryder Cup.
Yeah, it just happens during the European Open. And again, it's been canceled the past few years because of COVID. So I'm very excited when that comes back. And other people are asking about the 150 grams in Japan. It was basically in Japan, any flying object over 150 grams was considered a weapon.
I love that.
When the Japan Open was going on. And so basically, in order to play disc golf over there, every pro that went to the Japan Open had to fully redo their bag, and every disc in your bag had to be less than 150 grams. It was thrilling. It was very
cool. Is that because like ninja stars, you think?
I don't know. It was some law in Japan, but that's why Manabu Kajiyama, when I don't know if he still plays much, he was like one of the pound for pound farthest throwers in the world, but he was limited because he was in Japan, so his entire bag that he was used to was 150 grams. So when he'd come over to the States or play in the Australian Open or something like that, he had to make a decision of like, do I try to learn max weight discs that can fight the wind better and
I
can throw farther?
Or do I stick with what I know?
Or do I stick to what I know? Because he was like 150 pounds and the dude was ripping close to 500 feet. It was incredible to watch. But he was throwing 150 gram stuff.
How do you do track and field? Like, how are you doing shot put?
There might be exceptions. Okay. Like, they might be able to give an exception.
Because, like, a javelin is, I think, like, definitely over 150.
It's probably
grams.
Exceptions for stuff like that. It's probably just like a frisbee doesn't fit into an exception because, like, why would they write an exception just for a frisbee?
Well, they obviously wrote it for those
that's
things.
Because you're trying to win an Olympics. Or maybe it was, I don't know the full extent of the law. That's just what I was always told.
Okay. Well, it could be very well made up.
Do we have another caller?
Who told you that?
Yeah, we do.
Who told me that?
Yeah. Like a viable source here, or
well,
is this a Twitter?
That's why they all went to 150 grams.
No, I know, but the reasoning. I know that it was a law, but I'm saying the reasoning behind it. All right, it doesn't matter. All right. Last caller. Hello?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, let's end on a good one. What you got?
All right. Hey, my name's Patrick. I'm out of Oklahoma City. So two things. One is so you know how every state kind of has like the Oklahoma State's championship and then you have like the Texas State's championship.
Mm-hmm.
I thought an interesting thing that my buddy Chase was talking about is he said that every one of those should, because at minimum, usually they're like a B tier. Every one of those should have just that state's champion should represent maybe at the USDGC, like they should get a spot there.
Interesting. Interesting.
And how that would be cool, like every state kind of represented at the USDGC, you know, like if you won the Oklahoma State Championship in 2020, then you have an entry into the 2021, you know, like
so,
USDGC.
So this is what I would say to that. I would say a couple things. First one, there would have to be some sort of, we would have to get to the point of where, because I obviously last year was in that grind of like trying to qualify for USDGC. So I was in the fire and I was talking to other people that were in the fire, and you're literally trying to do everything you possibly can to qualify. So you would, for that to be legit, you obviously wouldn't want someone like myself not qualify. And then all of a sudden I just like start playing in these like state championships.
Well, I think
it would
have
to qualify.
Be in there this would, scenario. You'd have to be like,
there would have, cause you can't be amateur either.
It would have to be so you're a, what's it called? Resident of the state to play in the state championship.
I like that. But also I like the idea too of like, if you have your tour card, like if you, like if we get to the point of where you're a disc golf pro tour member or whatever, you're on the tour, you can't compete in these events either. Cause what you would end up having is like anyone on the pro tour, they would just come and they would all play in those events. And I like the idea of having something. And I would even add to that. I would say you have like 50 people, right? And then you almost have like a Miss America pageant situation,
yeah,
where all 50 of you guys go to an event and there's 10 spots that you're playing for. But so it's like,
because
you can't have 50 people show up to, I mean, you can't have half the field be people that are just state champions, right?
Yeah.
But if you did something where it's like this, I don't even know, the national state championship, that sounds sick. If you did that and then 10 people from there,
get to USDGC.
Yeah, I like that
idea.
Could
be interesting for sure.
I like that idea.
Well, I think the interesting thing about it could be, one, it could bring more eyeballs, like people in the state.
Yeah.
Get more excited about the state championships, right? It would mean more than just, you know, just at the B tier with 750 added. And then the other thing is, like, kind of what you said, it would it be a bad thing if, like, an Austin Hanum didn't qualify for USDGC, and now he's having to come play in the Oklahoma State Championships because that's where he's local from?
Yeah.
Like, is that a bad thing, or is that going to get more people to, like, Oklahoma, right?
Yeah, like, I don't like that, because I feel like there are enough chances for people on the tour to qualify. If they keep the qualifications kind of the way they have them, there are enough chances for people like that to qualify. So I feel like you would basically make it to where these state championships, if you're like a local pro, for example, right? It almost make it to where it doesn't even matter, because now, you know, let's say Texas, for example, let's say there's a world where Bradley and Emerson don't qualify. Now you're like, oh crap, these two guys are coming for the one spot. Like, to me, I think it holds a lot more weight if you're able to kind of have this like Cinderella story, if you will, and people can follow you. Like, okay, you won the state championship. Now they're going to the national state championship. Oh, he qualified. Now he's in USDGC. And now you have that whole community rooting you on, where like an Austin Hanum, for example, he's not going to get – those people are already going to root for him. Like, he's not gaining follow. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, does that make sense? Like a small town, like Cinderella story. He's not going to get that if he qualifies through the state championship.
No, I get what you're saying. So what kind of where you're getting at is like, it could almost be a way to create stars, right, within the sport.
Yeah.
Rather than letting stars just come in and take that qualification. Okay. Yeah. And then, my second question, and it kind of relates to the local scene, is, So I see a lot of Coda Hatfield in Oklahoma, right? And I think you played against him in a tournament.
Yeah, Coda's sick. Yeah.
One of the things that we debate about kind of in my group, I run a Tuesday night putting league at a bar, and then it also turns into like a mini whenever the sun will allow it to. But one of the things we talk about is like, would the pros be as good as the touring pros, right? Because we've seen Coda Hatfield, he just won the Veterans Memorial or something in Texas. You know, he beat Bradley Williams. It's on GK Pro. He had an insane putt. He didn't miss any putts in like the fourth round. It was insane.
Yeah. When his putter's on, it's nuts.
But with someone like that, like if they were able to like full-time tour, and I'm just saying him because, you know, to me, he's the best Oklahoman out there. But, you know, in Texas, I'm sure you played with people down there that were really good. Like if they were able to go full-time on the tour, like, Is it that the touring pros are like that much better than people like that that have been playing for 20 plus years and can have all the shots in their bag and can putt?
So two things here. First one, and I think Hunter can chime in too, because he's obviously been around the local scene here and seen people as well. The first one is the type of courses that these events are held are very, very, very different than a disc golf pro tour event. And they're getting more and more different. I've played at Veterans, for example. The Disc Golf Pro Tour would never hold an event there, not because it's a terrible course, just because of the skill gap and what the course offers. It's not on the same level as other events on the Disc Golf Pro Tour. So that's one thing of where you could have guys, and I'm not saying Coda, like Coda, for example, I think Coda could go on tour in cash and be a successful tour player. But there are people, I'm sure, in the local areas that dominate their local scene, but the reason they don't go on and dominate on tour, or when you do see them go on tour, they don't have great finishes or whatever it may be, is because their play style or their skill set is great for those type of courses. But when you go on to the longer, more difficult courses, it doesn't really translate. And so that is something to kind of think about of, are they just really, really good at those type of courses? Or is it the other thing too, I would say, is for someone like Coda Hatfield, I'm sure he's kind of crunched the numbers because he's been doing it long enough. He feels like he would make a lot more money going and winning all these events than going out and spending all the money to travel, to fly, to get hotels, to do all that stuff, and then not potentially even cash, right? Like if he goes to Veterans, in his mind, he knows he's cashing. But
yeah.
I think he's smart enough to know, like, if he goes to a Disc Golf Pro Tour event and he doesn't play that well, he's not cashing. Where he can go to Veterans and not play well and still cash. So What are your thoughts on that, on like the local scene? Can those guys go out and compete at on the tour
level? I would say I think that there's a handful of players on local scenes across the country that aren't on tour that could be on tour and be a top 30, 25 player. I don't think there is a player that's currently in a local scene across the country that would go out and be an Eagle, Paul, Rick, Calvin Heimer. No. I don't think that player exists.
James Proctor is the only one that I would say.
I don't think if he went on tour, he would be beating or competing with Eagle, Rick, Paul, week in and week out.
I think if he did disc golf full time, I think he would be in
this
I
year,
think,
like immediately first year in. Or are you saying once he's been on tour?
No, potential.
Sure, potential. There's tons of them. There's tons of players with potential.
I don't know. I'm saying like he's someone in my head that's like I've watched him play, and he has all the skills. Like he just isn't able to dedicate 100% to disc golf.
Sure.
Yeah. That was my point.
Yeah, like, yeah. I'm thinking a straight translate. I take a player straight out of the local scene, I plop him on the pro tour. Where is he finishing right now? Not like you give him time to develop on the pro tour. That's not what I'm thinking, because that's impossible to know.
Yeah, no, you
but
can't say
for
that.
Instance, my biggest experience is with North Carolina pros, and you can watch North Carolina pros that are shredding. A great example, this guy doesn't play disc golf anymore. Why? I don't know. He was filthy. His name was Colin Carter. He was a North Carolina pro in the Raleigh-Durham area. Shredded every tournament there. He was beating Barry Schultz week in and week out. He would not have translated well to the pro tour because...
Also, you need to take back James Proctor.
He was... I don't.
No,
he
you
was,
do.
He was picking...
Can I tell you real quick?
You can. You're not going to change my mind.
17th at Worlds.
Yep.
12th at Resistance Disc.
Yep.
9th at Portland Open.
Okay.
2nd at Masters Cup. Almost won. 15th at OTB Open.
Now, let me tell you something
gotta
about
take,
that.
You got to take that.
Masters Cup, basically his home course. Everything else, I guarantee you, if you go head-to-head, Ricky back. Paul, everyone I compared him to, slapped him.
I'm
so
just saying, if he has a full... All I'm saying is if he has a full thing, he goes full force, I think that guy...
We're arguing two different things.
Continue.
I said we pick a player out and we drop him on the tour, which is what the caller who I forgot's on the phone was asking. If you pick a player out and you drop him on the tour, where are they finishing? James Proctor is not beating Paul week in and week out if you drop him on the tour right now. Colin Carter, back to what I was saying. Colin Carter was filthy, was shredding North Carolina, shredding, winning week in and week out. But the issue is he was picking and choosing the courses that he knew he was good at, the shorter wooded courses, and he had a filthy, like, touch forehand to where that doesn't translate to the pro tour. It just doesn't happen to where, like, if you take a touchy forehand player or forehand dominant, but they don't have to throw 450 feet with their forehand week in and week out to win in North Carolina, they're not going to translate well to the pro tour. Whereas the player he's beating, Barry Schultz, would have had and did have a very successful tour season because he's a backhand dominant player and he had distance. To where, yeah, Colin Carter could smack him around in North Carolina, but Colin Carter couldn't have smacked him around in Las Vegas or on the Pro Tour, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So I think you got to, it's very picky and choosy about the local players.
Yeah, because like, well, my first thought, like for the example, is like Scott Withers, right? Like he tears up the
Northwest.
Yeah, and then he kind of goes on tour, and I don't think other than...
I'll look up.
There was one tournament where he got like lead card. I don't remember seeing him.
I'll look up his best finishes.
Another great example is Corey Ellis. Corey Ellis was filthy, still is filthy in Ohio, Kentucky, West Virginia area. But on like he beats everyone and everyone that I've played against Corey Ellis. It's hard to imagine players being better than Corey Ellis. But then you go on the pro tour and there's players that are better than Corey Ellis. It's just that when the best you're seeing is local pros week in and week out, that kind of starts to form this vision that that's the top. And then you see a player like Ricky or Eagle throw a disc, and it's just a whole nother level that you didn't know was possible.
Yes. Withers went 32nd at Worlds, 26th at Portland Open, 18th at Masters Cup, 15th at OTB.
Did he beat James Proctor there?
And 18th at Waco. What?
Did he beat James Proctor at OTB? Pretty close.
That's
a logical fallacy if he proves your argument wrong.
No. Okay. We won't keep you on here while we bicker back and forth. We appreciate you calling in.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
What I took his question as was, if you took Coda Hatfield and you dropped him on the pro tour, is he dominant or playing very well? And there's not a player that is. James Proctor, if you just dropped him on the pro tour right now and he had to go play
a full tour though, right? Or are you just saying one event?
You drop him at Green Mountain Championship. The guy's coming in 30th place.
I see what you're saying. We were talking about two different things.
Yes.
I agree with you. You're saying you can't pull someone right now that's dominating and drop him into a pro tour event and bet on them making a top 10 finish.
Exactly.
There's not anyone that's a good bet.
Correct.
My thing was, if James Proctor went full-time on tour and it was his full-time thing and not a side gig,
yeah,
like it is, I think at the end of the tour, you go back and you look, I think he's in the mix.
Because he would get better.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. Where some of these local pro guys, they don't, it's not because their ceiling is already reached.
Well, that's what my...
Like, they don't have a high enough seat. Like, even if they went out, oh my gosh, even if they went out and were like, well, I'm going to dedicate 100% of my day to disc golf, their ceiling is not high enough to even get to where the guys on tour are, like the top 10 guys.
Yeah.
Where Proctor, his ceiling is high enough to get there. And so if he did practice and put dedication and stuff to it and like only focused on that and it wasn't...
It's like someone,
job,
I forget.
That was my point.
I don't remember where this quote came from, but it was a legendary quote. And I don't remember who said it either. I wish I could remember. It was in some sport context. For some reason, I feel like a disc golfer said it. If a disc golfer said it, let me know because I want to find this video now that I'm thinking of it. But it might have just been a random sport. But someone was like trying to compare a young athlete to like someone who's at the top. And they were doing the like whole potential argument of like they're going to be better, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And the person responded and said, the issue is their potential ceiling is lower than my floor.
Yeah.
Basically, like as far as I could drop, they won't even be able to get there.
Yeah.
I was like, I heard the player say that. I was like, holy frick. Like, yeah. That's something to like that's, but that's kind of what you're saying. Is there some players that their ceiling as good as they can possibly get mm-hmm. will not be good enough to compete with the Eagles, Pauls, Ricky,
they
Calvin
just,
Heimbergs?
They just don't have the physical capabilities. They don't have the hand eye coordination.
There's some players in the top 20 that are like that. That they don't have the, they'll be top 20 players, but
yeah.
they can't
they don't have
break
the next
that
gear.
Top. Yeah, they don't have
the
that next gear to get there.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting thing, too. I mean, disc golf, I would say there is a lot less because on the athleticism side,
mm-hmm.
it's not like you need to be over 6 feet tall.
Yeah, you don't
like
need
in
to
the
have.
NFL,
yeah.
In the NFL, if you're under 6 foot, you're probably not going to ever be a quarterback. Like, there's very few quarterbacks that are successful in the NFL under 6 feet, right? And there's just certain things in other sports where it's like you have to have these physical
genetics
attributes.
Can hold you back.
And then on top of that, you have to actually be gifted in hand-eye coordination, gifted in all these other things. Where disc golf, you can be short, you can be tall, you can be fat, you can be skinny, you can be ripped, you can be all these things and still be
it's
successful.
It's similar to golf in that aspect.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, that was a good breaking point. So that's debate night. Someone did mention
that's 2021.
That's 2020. Final debate night, man. It's gonna be nuts. I'm not gonna see you guys until next year.
No, you're gonna see us tomorrow.
I'm not gonna see you guys until next year.
You're gonna see the viewers
debate
on debate night till next year.
I'm not gonna see the viewers till next year, and I'm not gonna see you guys on debate night till
that's true. We won't be on this set recording debate night and not one of the other five podcasts we do until next year.
Someone did say that they thought this podcast was gonna go behind the paywall, aka the Patreon paywall.
No.
It will not.
No.
This Grip Locked and Bogey Bro Banter will stay.
They're here to stay.
And we also potentially might be adding more.
Heck yeah.
If you ever thought how the heck could they add another podcast? Well, you just wait and see.
And beyond a podcast. Actually, on Grip Locked, spoiler alert, this week's Grip Locked,
it's going to be hot fire.
Trevor and Connor are out. They're not going to be here. Connor's on a vacation. Trevor's got some family stuff that made it sound like there's issues. There's not. Trevor's spending time with his wife this week. And so they're not going to be here with... Grip Locked, but what I'm gonna do is basically like a year-end wrap-up show and also give you kind of some behind the scene insights into next year, and I'll also give you all the disc golf news like I normally do. We just won't debate or talk about it between Trevor, Connor, and I until the following week.
I don't know, Silas might be a debater.
I will tag Silas in some.
He might be a debater.
I will get Silas's opinion on some stuff, but you know, if you want some, you know, a little sneak peek into what to expect from Foundation, from this channel, from our other channels next season, next year, check out Grip Locked tomorrow.
Silas, real quick, let the people know, because this, you might be one of the best people to ask this question with, because you literally just played your first hole of golf. Your first ball golf hole, if you will, today. Let the people listening and watching at home tell them what sport is harder and why.
Is it disc golf or is it golf?
Golf is much harder, I will say. Why? It just... I don't know. Making contact is just much more challenging than ripping a disc.
I think it's one simple. I came to this conclusion actually while I was watching Silas. That video will come out. Silas trying to break 20 on one hole.
It's gonna be. I'll tell you right now.
It's a thrilling video.
It will be an absolutely incredible video. It'll be this on Foundation Nation. This
spoils it. It's close.
It is a wild roller coaster we're on.
But I came to this conclusion watching Silas struggle some on the golf course as to what makes it harder, and it's just the simple aspect of adding the club. Because
it's not in your hand.
Yeah, because a disc, you can control everything here. A club, you have to control the club head and the distance and all of that. Like, well, people like ask, like, oh, we're playing the same sport. We're doing the same. Well, no, like if I was throwing the ball, disc golf would be harder than golf if I was throwing the ball.
Correct, because the ball goes straight. Because
the ball only is going to go straight. Yeah. People might learn some sick tricks with it, but the ball's going straight. But as soon as you add the club, then like you have so many more factors that it makes it harder because there's more ways to mess up.
And the other thing too is like me and Trevor talk about this all the time where you'll get put in a situation and we're like, he doesn't even know that he's in a situation.
No. And I appreciate like that's, what's funny is like
that's the crazy
thing. I'll walk up to my lie and you'll be like, this lie's tough, but Hunter doesn't know why. And I'm like, I don't want to know why right now. I just want to swing. I just want to swing.
Silas though, if you dedicated 1 year of your life to golf,
yeah,
or disc golf, like theoretically you clone yourself.
Yeah.
And one Silas A goes over here and dedicates his life to disc golf for 1 year. Silas B goes over here and dedicates his life to golf for 1 year.
Okay.
Which one do you think you would get better at? Like at the end of the day.
Like world ranking or what are we talking
about? No, like at the end of the day, like which one are you coming back and like playing and being like, oh, and having people be like, oh, Silas is pretty good at disc golf or oh, Silas is pretty good at golf. Like are you, do you think you're both? Do you think one? Do you think neither? What do you think?
I have no clue.
I think
how's golf, that a weird question? That's
I think
a great
golf. I think I'm leaning towards golf as well.
Not because
I think because
golf you start off a lot worse. Disc golf, once there's you get to a certain made. Level, I'll put it this way.
Like, you think the spectrum of golfers is like this? Like, bad golfers to good golfers is like this? And you think the spectrum for disc golfers is like that?
Opposite.
Oh, no, opposite. Sorry, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Correct.
The difference between a bad disc golfer and a good disc golfer is, like, not that much. But the difference between a bad golfer and a good golfer is a lot.
Absolutely.
So you have more room to go up the slide.
You have more
slide.
Room to grow.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Because 100%. I'll put it this way. If I took my friends out to a disc golf course, right, and we just walk up to the first hole, at my current skill level, I can do a lot that will impress my friends, will blow their mind. And I am not even close to being a great disc golf player.
No one's impressed with your golf swing.
That's what I'm saying. Golf,
that makes sense. Well, your putting today, Silas, his putting today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were impressed.
Yeah, I was on one.
But I think golf, if you saw me play beginning of December and then I play for a full year hardcore and I come back in December, it'd be mind blowing. Whereas disc golf, it'd be like, oh, yeah, he got a little better.
Yeah.
100%. I see what you're saying.
I think there's more room to improve in golf than there is in
people are also saying in the chat, one hole, yes, because...
he had never swung a club in his life.
I've never swung a golf club
this
in my
life.
Yeah,
like,
and we played by real rules of like... Well, yeah, we played by fully real rules.
Real rules.
Because even once he addressed his lie, if he whiffed, that was a stroke.
He had never
swung a golf club in his life.
And this is not someone that like has gone to Top Golf.
Yeah.
It's not someone that has... I would say the only thing you've done golf specific was play putt-putt prior to us?
Yeah.
Have you played prior to?
Yeah, like once or twice. Times.
Okay. So the only thing you've done golf-wise before this
is putt-putt.
Is putt-putt.
Yeah, that's it.
And I think the first time you actually swung a golf club, like literally just swung it, was in our warehouse like a week ago.
Yes.
And I put a water bottle down.
And we yelled at you for cheating.
Well, no, I told him I wanted to see what he was going to do.
I didn't want
to. So I let you take like five swings.
So you got five swings.
I got five swings.
So this might be like the most.
We put him on a par four.
Yeah. This video might be literally the most raw golfer you'll ever see in your life.
Not in a good way. No offense, Silas. But raw sounds like if I say I'm raw at basketball, that means I'm good at basketball.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of like Brody doesn't understand.
You did have a couple practice swings before the actual first hit.
Well, he practiced one, but he wasn't practicing like hitting a ball.
No. But I'm saying like
he was like warming up.
You did a couple warm-up swings.
Yeah, but no, you definitely warmed up.
And that's the other thing in golf. If you don't know what you're looking for on a warm-up swing, it tells you nothing.
Well, now, me, I was just trying
me,
to
me, I use
up.
My warm-up swing to make sure I'm hitting the ground at the right spot. But
yeah,
if I just sit there
just
and
trying not to pull a muscle.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I was just trying to get warm, get loose.
Are you going to go home and play virtual golf?
Not tonight.
Okay.
I got to get up early to work out tomorrow.
Okay. Well,
VR boxing's where it's at. I played VR table tennis against my brother last night. Electric. It was incredible.
All right. Well, I told Kelsey we'd end the show at 9. It's 9:30.
About right.
It sounds right on par. And yeah, so we'll end it there. Yeah, let's each take 15 seconds to end it. I'll start and we'll go around to Hunter and then Silas. Take 15, 30 seconds and just wrap up 2021 debate night.
All right.
Just want to thank everyone for listening. All the people that tune in live, appreciate it. This was kind of a passion project at the beginning of it, and it's turned into something that is really enjoyable, really fun. Even though I did try to kill it at one point in time, I'm glad I did not.
That was literally 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Sorry.
I did not, and I'm very excited to see where this show goes moving into 2022. So I appreciate all the support for the show. I'm glad you guys are enjoying it and cannot wait to see what happens next year.
Yeah, so, you know, I did not expect this show to be kind of as big, as good as it's gotten. I'm very, very pleased with what's been able to happen with the show over the last 21 weeks, 22 weeks, because we did miss 1 week. But what I will say is where this show can go is in the title. There's still not a lot of debates. There's still people calling in asking questions. We're going to figure that out on our end, maybe get some Twitter spaces going, figure out an easier call system, stuff like that. But I think that if you're a fan of this show, you probably enjoy the back and forth between Brody and I. I think the show's going to get to a next level when there's a back and forth between us and fans calling in, or not fans, haters calling into the show. I think when that happens, that's when the show really takes off. But I appreciate all of you for listening so far and enjoying the morphing that this show has slowly been going through and the growing pains of when Brody goes back on the road next season as well. Silas, wrap out the year.
Come on, Silas. Give it to the people.
Hey, it's
Come
been a great on. Year on
Producer
Debate
of
Night,
the year.
I will say.
Producer
it's been
of
a pleasure.
Year.
The show, I never thought it would get this big, to be honest. But, you know, now we're up there. We're up there on the Disc Golf Podcast.
Yeah, right below Grip Locked. Got to remind you all.
So thank you all for watching. Thank you all for listening. And hopefully it'll just keep getting bigger and bigger and getting better and better.